information. Before going any further, I want to...
This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
The art of Ilya and Emilia Kabakov is defined, for me, by its embodiment of a unique blending of sensibilities. And these sensibilities, as shorthand, we might describe as those of tradition and innovation. It's important to remember that they received education, so it's a bit odd to describe them as they sit here, but, you know, it's continue to do so. It is important to remember that they received educations in the Soviet Union in music and art that were, in our terms, highly conventional, grounded in a worldview that predated the eruption of the avant-garde into the cultural sphere of modernity. As such, they are among the very few prominent contemporary artists who can look at a painting such as this and see this Raphael not as some quaint relic from a distant moment in history, but as a vital force in their artistic vocabulary. In other words, within the Kabakov's art, there is a very traditional sensibility, an abiding commitment to past cultural achievements, to harmony, to beauty, to a kind of monumental simplicity, to a profound desire to entice the viewer rather than to shock her. Now, on the other hand, they are also keenly aware that, in fact, we do not choose the time and place of our creativity. The Kabakovs inhabit this piece of earth in our time. They're even sitting next to me. So the challenge, the drama of their art can be seen in their wrestling with this spirit of innovation and transformation. How to respond in our time to Raphael's portrait of natural beauty and maternal affection, the artist's remarkable orchestration of light, color, and line. So I would suggest that a work such as this, Labyrinth, My Mother's Album, aims to do exactly this, though one might not see this at first. It doesn't look very much like a Raphael. And the key question here is one cannot simply employ the technique of Raphael in our time. Such an approach would seem nostalgic, artificial, and despite one's best intentions, it would function as kitsch. The Kabakov's art knows this. One must instead perform a kind of psychic translation of the Raphael sensitivity to atmosphere, color, composition, and light. And in this way, the shoddy, painted, half-lit corridor, the framed pages recounting the life of Ilya Kabakov's mother that appear on the left-hand wall, and a recording of the artist singing, all of them together, they strive to evoke the qualities of the Raphael, but in this case, in a claustrophobic idiom, a place far from nature, creating a space redolent of maternal affection, but one also filled with repressed memories and long shadows. And this is, for me, the essence of what the Kabakovs will describe as, total installation. So, or in a very different way, you'll see their outdoor public installation, the rice fields. This is located in the Japanese countryside. Here they've framed a sculptural ensemble with passages of poetry that have been installed on a hillside, evoking, I would argue, the visual world of, say, Nicolas Poussin and his famous bucolic landscapes, as well as Poussin's devotion to poetry, without in any obvious way imitating the Poussin. And personally, I think that you could say that the Kabakovs would be very comfortable living inside some sort of art time machine, producing their work in any number of times and places for quite different audiences. And that sensibility is one of the reasons why there's an atmosphere of fantasy, of timelessness, and storytelling that so often surrounds their art. But there is another side to the Kabakov's practice, what might be called its long-running dialogue with the avant-gardist sensibility. And this dates back at least to the 1970s. And I kind of suggest this image where you see Malevich in his post-revolutionary glory in Ilha in the 1970s, and their attire, their demeanor, the whole social situation that the two images suggest tells you a great deal about where they relate to the avant-garde. That is, throughout the Kabakov's art, there's an overt dialogue not only with the great works of the distant past, but also with the history of modern art. And so you see this even in the 1970s. Something like this. Ilya would redeploy something like the centripetal energy of an austere, secular, abstract painting by Alexander Rodchenko, and then would turn it somehow into a drawing of wings. Maybe these are even angels' wings, or something along the lines of one of Lisitsky's paraouns would move from the realm of abstract contemplation to some sort of humanized jumble of geometric forms and bodies in motion. And what I want to argue is that the evocation of modern art's genealogy has reappeared with tremendous force in the paintings that they have produced in the past 10 years. For example, this is a painting called Landscape with a Barge. And if you know Russian painting, perhaps the most famous painting of the 19th century involves barge hauling on the Volga. Now, if you look at this painting, you'll see that very quickly, two different 19th century paintings, and I just more or less randomly grabbed them, but they're absolutely there, are Levitan, the Russian 19th century landscapist, and Paul Cézanne. And then those two paintings are somehow thread through, I would argue, this kind of language of Malevich, and then you end up back with some sort of concatenation that combines all three. And the final distillation is this quasi-socialist realist canvas. And what I want to say is that this sense of the of modern art's genealogy and its continuing relevance today is a crucial point within their work. And you see this in particular with their orientation towards the utopian. So the elimination of utopianism, alas, is also yet another form of utopianism. And I think you see this throughout their work. The creation of projects, project thinking, the formulation of all kinds of utopias is eminently inherent in us, our consciousness, and furthermore, it rests as a stimulus and as a basis for any of our actions as long as we remain human beings. So this will be my first question to them is, what is the relationship between human beings and utopias, something that will always pop up in their art. And the words are sort of resonate with these two images for me, Shurpin's painting of Stalin and the post-war years, and Malevich's painting of a peasant head. And it's at this point that I think the Kabakov's art articulates an ever-changing, ambitious project designed to reintegrate contemporary art into the public imagination. Now, the question is, how do you reintegrate these utopian sensibilities into contemporary art? And so much of their art has been dedicated to this project. So for me, we see this sensibility of utopianism without utopia in their total installation, such as the Palace of Projects here. It's a massive installation piece, and it evokes Tatlin's design for the monument of the Third International. But the palace itself is in turn filled with plans and designs. And these plans and designs, what you see down below, they vary some from the totally misguided to the not so bad, something in between. Here's an example of one of them. Make two wings, and using this sketch that's appended to the project and also the leather straps, you need to make those for attaching these wings to your back. After this, stay alone in your room. This condition is important for both the productivity of the impending activity as well as to avoid undesirable reactions on the part of your family. And put on the wings and sit in silence without doing anything for 5 to 10 minutes. After this, you should go about your usual chores without leaving your room. After 2 more hours, you should repeat this initial pause again. After 2 to 3 weeks of these daily procedures, the effect of the wings will begin to manifest itself with greater and greater force. And these instructions point to the idea of the public project more generally, which is there's the importance of pedagogy and learning today as opposed to entertainment. And what is the relationship between pedagogy and entertainment? In this ethos of pedagogy and entertainment and the questions that the rupture between the two bring up frequently appears in works dedicated to childhood or into the experiences of children. It turns us towards dormitories and schools. Or in the case here, if you ever have the opportunity, go to West Texas to the Chinati Foundation in Marfa, and you'll see school number 6. And in this installation, you'll see this Soviet-era schoolroom. And you pass through it, and it's really an intense, visceral experience to walk through this abandoned Soviet schoolroom in the West Texas landscape. And actually, walking through it, even if you've never been to the Soviet Union or if you've never been to Russia, you still have this intense sense of something that was monumental and tremendous and ambitious, but it's gone now. And I think that there is a very complex relationship within their work to the Soviet Union, and it's become more complex over time. And in their most recent work, which is the Ship of Tolerance, I would argue that with this piece, well, let me describe it a bit. It's an actual ship that's festooned with drawings made by local school children. And it has appeared in Egypt, in Cuba, and it's destined to appear in many other locales, including in New York, I believe, in the fall. And I would argue that with this project, it is as if the Kabakovs have themselves returned to their own Soviet childhoods, and they're actually trying to bring about in the contemporary art world the manifestation of all those old, cherished Soviet ideals of international cooperation and peaceful coexistence. And I would say with that we should turn the floor over to them and allow them to refute most of what I just said. Ideally, that's what would happen. Thanks. So?
I don't know where to start.
Okay, good. Utopia. You're often described as artists who are interested in utopia, in the utopian. What does that mean? Is that true?
Yes, that's true. Probably because we were raised in a country which was built as a utopian country. It went wrong, but the original idea was continuation of and reconstruction of utopia, real construction of utopia. It's not old idea. It's probably as long as humanity exists, people do try and do believe in utopia in different forms and different configurations. But it's the first time it actually was somebody tried to realize. What you said right now about Ship of Tolerance, I go right to the back. I don't know if it's about Soviet, it's connected to Soviet connectivity to universal collaboration. It's more about future. It's not so much about past. It's about future. It's about teaching children the idea of culture and importance of culture and importance of understanding different cultures, different languages, different religions, being tolerant instead of being aggressive, being knowledgeable instead of being ignorant. So maybe it's definitely come back from our past and our beliefs in something that not everything is material and there is other values in this world. But that's what it is. Ты хочешь что-то сказать? Утопия.
Ну, я тоже бы хотел что-то сказать.
I'd also like to say something about this.
Значит, Во-первых, нужно сказать, какое значение имел концептуализм и что означал концептуализм в России.
First of all, one has to explain what conceptualism means, what conceptualism meant in the Soviet Union.
Конечно, я выскажу только субъективные, собственные, как бы,
представления. Of course, this is all my subjective views that I'm going to express here today.
Прежде всего, это не было художественным направлением, некоторым проблемой языка и вообще некоторых, так сказать, систем знаков и обозначений.
So, first of all, this wasn't an artistic movement. It was a set of discursive practices moving towards specific linguistic problems.
То, что обычно связывают с Косотом.
That's what's usually attached with the concept.
В наших условиях под концептуализмом можно понимать, что вообще все, что существует в мире, это не есть реальность, а что это есть определенный образом сочиненный концепт.
So in our circumstances, one had to understand that everything that existed in our reality was not a reality, it was the embodiment of certain kinds of concepts.
Что нет ничего естественного, нет ничего природного, нет ничего...
There's nothing natural, nothing from nature here.
Есть только чей-то замысел, или это универсальный глобальный проект, концепт, так сказать.
There's someone's idea present here in our reality then, that someone had thought up.
Или это проект каких-то правителей, организаторов, менеджеров или каких-то
ретиратов. Some kind of a ruler, governing class,
managers.
Доказательством вот такой, так сказать, психологического, универсального понимания концептуализма как проекта связано с тем, что мы жили и работали во второй половине 20 века.
So the importance of the universal conception of conceptualism for us is related to the fact that we lived in the second half of the 20th century.
И мы совершенно изумительно видели окончание той пьесы, первое действие, которое было сочинено в первой половине века.
And we were witnesses in a perfect way to the end of that work, of that opera that was begun in the first half of the 20th century.
Так сказать, первая половина века, особенно это русская, это великий, так сказать, социалистический проект.
So the first half of the 20th century in the Russian context was, of course, the great socialist experiment.
Который касался изменения социального и политического, так сказать, состояния людей.
Which was concerned with the transformation of the political and the social being of people.
Но одновременно это был еще проект в области искусства.
But it was also an artistic project.
Художественный проект, который должен был полностью уничтожить все, что сделано было раньше,
intended,
и построить совершенно новую систему художественных ценностей.
It was intended to destroy everything that had been done in the past in the area of art and to create an entirely new artistic world.
Оба проекта, и политический, и художественный, начинались с невероятного энергетического взрыва энтузиазма.
So both of these projects, both the political and the aesthetic, began with a huge burst of creative energy and enthusiasm.
И во второй половине, особенно к концу 20-х, мы увидели полную катастрофу и результаты и политического, и художественного проекта.
But in the second half of the century, we saw the absolute failure and catastrophe of both the political and the aesthetic projects.
Я умышленно связываю, так сказать, энтузиазм и одновременно окончание и художественного, и политического проекта, потому что они связаны друг с другом.
I intentionally connect the enthusiasm and the catastrophe and failure of the project because they are connected together.
Проблема оказалась следующим образом, что все, что делается хорошего и в жизни, и в искусстве, имеет три стороны.
So it's the crux of the matter is in the following, that everything that is done well in life and in art has three sides.
Мне очень понравилось, что первая картинка, которую показывал Маттео, это была картинка Рафаэля.
I was very pleased that the first image that we looked at today was a painting by Raphael.
В ней соединены вот эти три начала, о которых я сейчас скажу.
And in that painting we can see these three elements that I'm going to tell you about now.
Первое — это возвышенность.
The first is the elevated, the sublime.
Это движение кверху, в вертикали, к чему-то высокому, идеальному и прекрасному.
Movement upwards to something which is beautiful and wonderful and transcendent.
Вторая часть – это художественное выражение, это гармония, сбалансированность, ответ одной стороны на другой и так далее.
The second is the artistic task of the balancing, of the harmonizing of the elements, of the harmonizing the various elements of one question with an answer.
И это, конечно, речь идет как о социальной жизни людей, так и о художественной форме.
And this also, this concerns both with regard to the lives of people and to artistic form.
И, наконец, третий компонент мы можем назвать словом человечность.
And the third element is we can refer to with the word humanity or humanness.
Это то, что к чему нас подвел особенно близко 19 век, где проблема человека, его существования и жизни была самым главным темой всего века.
This is what the element that we came closest to in the 19th century, when the problem of the human, of his real existence, was at the center of attention.
Глядя на 20 век, мы видим, что в проекте, как социальном, так и художественном, отсутствуют как первые, как возвышенные элементы.
So in the 20th century, we see, when we look at both the political projects and the aesthetic projects of the 20th century, the absence, first of all, of the first element, the sublime.
И также полностью отсутствует человечный материал.
But also the absence of the third element, of the human.
Это те утопические проекты, неважно, гитлеровской Германии или это Советского Союза, это устройство прекрасного рая, но без человека, так сказать.
This is a common feature of any kind of a utopian project of the 20th century, whether it's the fascist Hitler project or the Soviet project, it's the absence of the real human.
То же самое мы видим и во всей, так сказать, практике классического авангарда.
We see the same thing in all the practice of the classical avant-garde.
Прекрасный диапазон, разнообразные формы эстетических открытий и художественных проектов.
The sublime aspect of various artistic projects.
При почти полном отсутствии стремления, так сказать, к идеализму, к возвышенному и при полной бесчеловечности всего, так сказать, традиции авангарда.
So the presence of the aesthetic element, but the lack of the sublime element, the yearning for the transcendent.
Конечно, если бы я родился во времена Лисицкого, Татлина, Малевича, то, конечно, я бы точно так же хотел бы реформировать, бежать впереди всех людей, тоже создать что-то гигантское, универсальное, или как третий художественный интернационал, как хотел создать всемирный Лисицкий и так далее.
So, if I had lived in that age, of course, the age of Лисицкий or Татлин or Малевич, I would have, of course, wanted to run ahead of the curve of history and create something global, total, like the monument, Татлин's monument to the third international.
Но так пришлось, что я и работал, и жил в конце 20 века, то есть начиная с... И уже полностью видел, как сказать, ту кашу, которую варили так с таким энтузиазмом, и которую невозможно было съесть в то время, когда надо было уже на стол поставить.
The witness to that kasha, that oatmeal mush that they had brewed up in the early 20th century and which was impossible to digest in the continuation of it.
Поэтому из этого вот эта общая универсальная, так сказать, концепция, которую я сейчас высказал, вытекают те задачи и те объяснения того, что делалось в начале века и то, что происходило в конце века в России.
So out of this general explanation of those total projects, total aesthetic political projects, flows the situation, the understanding of what happened in the later 20th century.
Да, это как бы ситуация отца, который хотел что-то сделать лучше, и сын, который видит, что, как всегда, ничего не получилось.
It's the situation of the father who tried to do something wonderful, and the son who has to face the fact that nothing, it all came out the same way as always.
Но речь одновременно идет о том, что все не так просто, и в универсальном проекте, я имею в виду советский универсальный проект, содержался огромный идеалистический элемент, который не был реализован.
But it also must be recognized that things are not as simple as that, and that even in the total universal Soviet project that we've been discussing, there was an ideal element which was not realized, which must be recognized.
Это, конечно, центральный пункт, это проблема утопии.
This is the central point, the problem of the utopia.
Дело в том, что утопию от самого слова нет места. Как не, так сказать, выгоняя из его из окна, он войдет в дверь.
So the problem with utopia is that when you try and get rid of it, when you try and drive it out the door, it comes back in through the window.
Пока мы люди, мы сочиняем и мы производим утопии. Это очень важное, так сказать, умозаключение, которое, так сказать.
As long as we remain people, we will be producing and creating more and more utopias.
В нас вложен внутри, что пока мы люди, мы должны создавать возвышенные утопические проекты. Мы должны создавать что-то, лежащее в глубине наших человеческих генотипа.
This is something which is deeply human, which has been placed inside of us, into our genotype, that we are driven always to create something elevated and sublime.
Мы неизбежно должны иметь память об утопии. Вот так можно сказать.
We must always remember the utopia. One may put it that way.
Как только мы теряем память, мы превращаемся в зверей. Мы просто ниже животных, хуже животных. Потому что животные это еще нормальные существа.
When we stop remembering the utopia, that's when we become like animals or worse than animals.
Вот в этом балансе между что утопию невозможно реализовать и в то же время невозможно избавиться от утопизма. В этом особая человеческая, так сказать, драматургия и драматургия для каждого художника.
So in this balance between the fact that one can never realize a utopia, but nevertheless one may not forget the utopia, lies the specific dramatic quality of the human existence and the specific basis for artistic activity for each artist in a different way.
Сегодня все, кто сейчас сидит в зале, и все вокруг, и все, кто участвует в арт-жизни, полны глубочайшего отвращения и скепсиса по отношению к тому, что сегодня делается в искусстве.
So everyone who sits in this hall today, all the members of the audience, and everyone who has anything to do with art, is filled with total skepticism and disgust at everything which is done in the name of art.
Конечно, все профессионалы и все этим занимаются, потому что все обучены и бросить это никто не будет.
Of course, everyone, the professionals, everyone will continue to, you know, to deal with art, take part in it, because they're professionals, they can't stop, they have to.
Внутри все отравлены, все полны ядом по отношению, так сказать, к тому, что происходит.
Nevertheless, everyone is poisoned inside by what is going on in art.
Эта ситуация не новая.
It's not a new situation.
Периодически в истории искусства, как и в истории жизни, происходит период вот этого, так сказать, отравления, омерзения к тому, что, так сказать, происходит.
With a certain periodicity in the history of art, we have these periods, which are periods of the poisoning of art, of the
atmosphere in the art.
What was the word?
Kind of atmosphere in the art.
В таких условиях существует два пути.
So in these circumstances we have two paths.
Или мечтатели, которые считают, что нужно, так сказать, изменить, отбросить это и двинуться вперед к новому, так сказать,
Either
к новому этапу.
Dreamers who think that we have to like get rid of this stage to move on to some new stage in some radical way.
Это то, что породило авангард.
This is what the avant-garde was all about.
Или наоборот, глубочайший скепсис и неверие в будущее, что ничего нельзя изменить.
Or deep, profound skepticism and a belief that there is no way to change anything, no way to escape.
Это как раз сегодняшний день. Никто, ни художники, ни искусствоведы, ни историки не верят в будущее.
And that is, in principle, the contemporary moment where art historians, artists, no one has any belief in the future.
В такой ситуации есть только один выход. Наше будущее – это наше прошлое.
There is only one exit from such a situation, and that is to recognize that our future is our past.
Точно так же, как возрождение, есть был огромный прыжок назад, сейчас об этом говорится, так сказать, с большим трудом, то есть прыжок в античность.
In the same way that the Renaissance was, in fact, a huge jump backwards in time to antiquity.
Точно так же в ближайшее время, и это мы еще увидим на своей жизни, будет гигантский прыжок тоже в обратную сторону, назад.
In the same way, in our lives, in the very near future, we will see a huge jump to the past.
В поисках вот этих трех вещей.
In the search of these three things.
Идеализма, эстетики
idealism
и человечности.
And the human.
Но это наше, так сказать, будущее, прошлое, будет уже не в античность, которую все забыли, конечно, и которая не может никого питать.
But our future past, the past that will become important to us in the future, will not be the past of antiquity, which is already so alien to us.
Но это будет для нас, это прошлое античное, будет итальянское возрождение в двух его ипостасях.
For us, it will be the Italian Renaissance in its two hypostases.
Первое, связанное с Рафаэлем и с идеализмом, то есть First, создание идеальных форм,
идеальной
гармонии,
идеального
баланса, идеального,
ideal
так сказать, идеального. И в драматической форме, форме работ Микеланджело.
And the other version, the dramatic form,
то, что приближается нас к барочной фазе Возрождения.
Which takes us to the Baroque phase of the Renaissance.
Там, где искусство будет понято как драма, как конфликт, как страшная
drama,
пьеса, которая не имеет никаких, так сказать, выходов.
A striking play, which has no resolution.
Достаточно то, что я наговорил.
Это I think that's a good start, what I said so far.
Но yeah. это говорит, конечно, человек, которому 80 лет.
But understand that you're listening to an 80-year-old.
Now. Если бы мне было сейчас 20,
if I were 20 right now,
я бы даже ни слова не понял из того, что несет этот пожилой
человек. I wouldn't understand a word that I just said.
Потому что у 20-летнего очень важная задача. Я родился сюда и хочу тоже кричать так же, как и все остальные. Услышьте меня.
But 20-year-old has a very important task, and that is to be heard. I've been born, and I'm gonna yell so that everyone will hear me.
Я тоже здесь.
Yeah, I'm here too. That's the task of the
20-year-old. Но если бы мне было 40 лет, то я тоже бы так не думал. А моя задача была бы участвовать в современном искусстве так же, как сегодня.
Of course, a 40-year-old wouldn't
занять позицию,
because a 40-year-old
needs to take part. Попасть в галерею, в музей, чтобы мне говорили, что я тоже здесь. Как
take part in the establishment, you know, get my art into the gallery, take part in the, you know, art world. Make a name for myself.
И только достигнув 80 лет, ты плюешь на и на первого, и на второго.
But only at age 80, having passed through both of those phases.
И для тебя, так сказать, существует только прошлое, а сегодняшнего нет.
At that point, you understand that the only thing that exists for you,
так что я,
from today's point of view, is the past.
Yep.
25 years ago, we were given lecture just considering everything he just said. We were given lecture in Germany. That was exactly 25 years. Yeah, 25 years ago, with a very young audience in East Germany. And as you understand, at that time, art in East Germany was very back, considering contemporary art. And we were talking about contemporary art today, installation art. And it was like 2 hours lecture, and after the lecture, the dean of university stand up and he said, my dear students, everything that these people just said, you don't have to listen. This is very personal. So 25 years later, he's talking about going back into the past and contemporary art is terrible. So there is anybody wants to say you don't have to listen.
В этом состоит та ирония. Мы еще можем.
It's very ironic.
Ирония жизни самой. Мы все или маленькие, или мы средние, или мы старые. И это три разных человека.
You know, little. Or in the middle, or we're old.
Я бы так в такой притче изложил, что задача молодого человека – это попасть на платформу.
So I would say there's a fable to be told here. The task of the young person is to get
так,
on the podium. Такая
транспортная метафора. Задача среднего.
Oh, to get on the train platform. That's the.
Задача среднего периода – попасть в вагон и сидеть в нем и держаться всем вместе.
The task in midlife is to get into the train car and find a place to sit.
А в третьем возрасте ты чувствуешь, что ты сидишь в вагоне, но мимо тебя уже идут поезда совершенно в другом направлении.
Last phase. You're sitting in the train and you see train cars flying past you in a completely different direction than you expected, in the wrong direction.
what you're seeing is something that I saw when I would deal with the manuscript production, that one of the things that's really striking about the Kabukov's work is there's so much language throughout the work, and I would see Ilya, and you would assume there'd be some sort of editorial process. Ilya would simply take a piece of paper and begin writing, and then would hand the paper in to be published. I don't remember there being any editorial process. You would see something, there might have been a that was added here or there. The stories come forward and then they appear in the installations, and there's not a great deal of delay or change. And it's one of those things where the whole status of language is one of the things that I've always been fascinated by, because I would argue that Ilya's a Russian author.
That's a privilege of being a non-professional writer. You don't have to edit. You go away as an artist writing text.
But that's just it, is that all of these different texts that appear throughout, Ilya has produced 7 or 8 different volumes of texts. What is the status of these, of all of the verbal work?
Well, unfortunately, it is published in Russian now, very strangely, because we never translated and we never publish our works when we're doing installation, never published texts in Russian, only in different languages, everything except Russian, although originals were written in Russian. Now, suddenly, there is a publisher in Russia who published every text ever was written by Ilya. We couldn't find publisher in the United States. Everything is translated to English during all these years, but there is no publisher. And we do have enormous amount of text, which is true. It's not only installation, it's theoretical books, some of them translated to English and published in Germany, in English and German, French, but nothing in the United States.
Can I ask you, are you American artists?
That's a good question. International American, yes. Born in Russia. American artist born in Russia.
I'm hesitant to ask my follow-up questions, which are the most basic question is, Ilya's already answered every question that I had imagined, I think maybe we should open it up to the floor at this point.
It's supposed to be dialogue with the
audience. It is a dialogue with the artist, so yes. Please... take them up on the dialogue.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much. I wonder if you could talk about your most recent pieces. You have many shows that are being organized now in Madrid, in London, in other places, and I would be very interested to hear something about those projects you're working on right now.
We have a lot of projects in work right now. The last year we did an exhibition which was kind of retrospective. It was paintings, and it was the title was Return to Painting. A little bit incorrect, because during all these years, Ilya didn't stop painting. He always was doing painting. What happened, we did put painting into installation. So in Europe, a lot of people knew that we're doing paintings, but in America, known only as an artist of installation, and nobody knows that there is enormous amount of painting. Enormous, I would say, during all these years, about 700 paintings by now. This was one project which was very interesting, because people could see the whole specter from 1960s up till now of the paintings, and how they evaluate, how they change, what's going on. And strangely enough, even for us, suddenly we saw the whole specter is going back, like circle. It started with the white, it's going now through the dark to the white again. He just wrote a book about it. This year we did a very interesting project. It was suggested by the museum in Eindhoven, Van Abbin Museum, which has enormous collection. It's actually the only Western museum which has enormous collection of Lisitsky. And they suggested to kind of collaborate, made exhibition of two artists, Kabakovs and Lisitsky. We did the exhibition come out very interestingly, because different energy. Lisitsky energy was enthusiasm, dream about utopia, they go in reconstruction of the world, changing of the people, new men. we're going to have new world and new people. Kabakov's come out as, and we did like a sections, maybe Ilya later elaborate more about it. And it completely different situation, completely different energy. It's the end of this utopia. It's the end of energy. Everything is going down. For example, if he has construction of new buildings, we have kind of garbage there, and so on. This is traveling exhibition when you were talking about. It's going to Hermitage Museum. It's going to Moscow, and then it's going to Graz, and maybe it's Israel. It's a lot of, again, no United States for some strange reason. London, it's a small exhibition. It's a university exhibition, and it's installation. We don't do right now a new installation, but it's old installation, The Happiest Man. It's, again, idea of utopism. The man who's trying to escape from this life by, in the movie theater, building a little apartment, and from this apartment, watching the movie constantly. So his escapism is there is no world around him. He is in the movie, and that's his life. And the movie there, it's a paradise. When you look from the window of the apartment into the screen, it's a completely different picture in front of you than the one you see from the as an actual viewer from the movie theater. It's bigger, it's brighter, it's cleaner, and we selected Soviet movies from 30s, 40s because that's where utopia was in its best. They presented this utopia in a way as a reality. That was not like Hollywood, because Hollywood, difference between Soviet utopia and Hollywood utopia of tourists, Hollywood was about movie, it's about stars, it's about music. Soviet utopia, it's about common people. It's workers in the field, but these workers are so clean and so beautiful. And they're in the field, but they're dancing. Everything they do, they running toward you. And you get caught in this enthusiasm. It looks like the tractor is the biggest in the world, and the faces are the best-looking women in the world. They're happy. And when they're happy, you also got involved personally in this happiness, and that's what this movie is about, what this installation is about. We have a ongoing project, which is started as a little project done by some gallery in Egypt, in Siwa. But during the construction, we work with the children, and it's a very, very, very religious Muslim society. So the children were there, I would say just very simply, girls get married in 12 when they're 12, and they never go outside of the house again. That was the first time they actually encountered different people, different kind of people. They were talking about some things, about the world, about history. It started as an idea of culture being transported by the ship, because Siwa was in desert and the children never saw water, never mind ships. They didn't know what it is. So we brought them books and they had to make drawings of the ships, which eventually made the sail of the ship we built. But then the project was so beautiful visually and so interesting that we decided to kind of change it and make it Ship of Tolerance. So by now it's went through 5 countries. We work with underprivileged children. We work with the children of different religions, different standing. We try to select schools which are the most problematic in every sense. And it's like a school education about tolerance, religious, as I said, racism, immigration in many countries like Italy. Our last project was in Cuba, which was very good because we also have satellite project, talented musicians, young talented musicians between 12 and 16. And we brought Russian and American children to Cuba, and it's the first time American children legally went to Cuba. We get a special permit from American government, which wasn't easy, I have to tell you. It was a big fight. Now we're doing the opposite thing. We're taking American and Cuban children to Russia, and also Swiss join us, and English children. We're going to do the same in New York in September. We're taking Russian, Cuban, Swiss, London. And then we are asked to do it in Tijuana, because there is a lot of drugs, there is a lot of situation. It's a little bit difficult for us by now, because you know we're not used to travel one project so many times. But there is a special program for children, and dilemma is, should we drop it because it's an art project for us, which is kind of overdone, or should we continue because it's a social project which has a social meaning and importance for children and for their mind and for their future? We hope so, and some of the children are already grown up, and some of the children are, let's say they started when they were 5, now they're 7 or 8, and they request to be ambassadors of tolerance, and they want now to travel, for example, to New York and present their point of view on tolerance to New York children. So that's our next project. Also for the next year, we're preparing where the next start is for big project Monumenta. This is monumental project in Paris and Grand Palais, going on for 5 years. One artist selected of a very high international standing to occupy the whole Grand Palais and present something that what they want. Based on what was done before, so for example, Baltansky did like cemetery when all the clothes was fallen down and pick up and again fallen down. It was also in New York Armory. Kiefer, I think, did something which was completely destruction and everything was destroyed, like a destroyed remnants of the city. We build an utopian city, we build in a city. We have 7 buildings and it's like chapels of art. So I'm not gonna go more into it because there is a dark chapel, there is a white chapel, there is different museum chapels, but it's a 7 buildings, there is a gate, and in general it's all constitute a city. Not easy to organize. It was canceled at some point, now it's on again. And that's mostly our biggest project at all, but it's also our biggest project for the next couple of years. So that's answer your question.
Ну, я хотел просто добавить
I just want to add that
некоторые разницы, которые некоторые разницы в продукции, которая делалась, пока я жил в Советском Союзе, и с та продукция, которая делается сейчас.
I just want to mention some certain sort of differences between the kinds of work that I did when I was living in the Soviet Union and the kinds of work that I'm doing now.
Я хотел бы сказать о типе продукции и ее, так
First of all, about the type of production.
Хотя, конечно, полностью весь материал, конечно, наследуется из той темы, которая есть Советский Союз, то есть я полностью и до сих пор полностью погружен в тот мир, из которого я уехал.
Although it must be said that all of the material that I work with is inherited from that context, from the fact that I lived in the Soviet Union.
И никакие элементы ни европейской жизни, ни американской, никаким образом не входят в этот материал.
The American life of European life don't enter into the material of my work.
Вот, то есть фантазия, голова работает только с тем, так сказать, накопленным багажом, который я несу с собой.
My fantasy, my imagination, my head works only with that experience.
Но тем не менее, очень интересное можно сделать наблюдение. Дело в том, что огромное количество и инсталляций, и картин особенно, которые делались в России, все были пропитаны, буквально нанизаны на текст.
So you can still make some interesting observations, nevertheless, about differences. All of the work that I did in the Soviet Union, everything, all of my paintings even, were struck through with, they were imbued with the problem of the text.
Было безумное желание не только что-то рисовать, но беспрерывно комментировать это рисование, беспрерывно что-то такое там сопровождать текстами или просто вводить текст внутрь картины.
So there was a continuous desire not only to paint and create a painting or an artwork, but also to comment on that artwork, to surround it with commentary, or to introduce the commentary into the artwork itself.
Но вот с тех пор, как я делаю, вот особенно последние 6 лет картины, там нет ни одного, так сказать, текста, и они сделаны так, что они не нуждаются ни в каких комментариях.
But in the last 6 years especially, I've been doing works, especially these paintings, in which there's not a single line of text, in which there is no need even for text, for commentary, from my point of view.
Из этого посторонний наблюдатель может сделать простой вывод, что вся жизнь и все искусство, сделанное в России, все нарративно, так сказать, по существу всегда.
One make a spectator of this sort of transformation might make the observation, the simple observation, that all life in the Soviet Union, everything in the Soviet Union, was narrative and textual in
nature. Оно все пропитано дидактикой, пропитано объяснениями, пропитано воспитанием, пропитано огромное количество, как бы зритель – это тот ребенок, которому нужно постоянно всовывать безостановочно в рот, в глаза, в душу, так сказать, то, что ты хочешь.
Viewer of art there was always in need of instruction. He was the person who had to have something driven into his head.
Это традиция великой русской литературы.
That is the tradition of great Russian literature.
И пока ты находишься, так сказать, в этом облаке, так сказать, в этой радиационной радиации, ты выскочить из этого не можешь.
And while you yourself are located in that radiation sphere, in that zone of radiation, there's no way of escaping it.
И вот эта цивилизация, в которой я живу здесь, я, вне сомнения, не принадлежу ей.
But this civilization in which I'm living here, of course, I don't belong to it.
Проявилась в том, что никого не нужно, так сказать, агитировать, никому не нужно всовывать, никому не нужно ничего объяснять.
It's manifested itself in my work in the fact that there's no need to explain anything to anyone. No one needs anything explained to them. Nothing needs to be sort of driven into anyone's head here.
Можно сказать, что русская цивилизация, или советская особенно, это цивилизация детей и учителей.
One may say that the Soviet civilization was a civilization of children and teachers.
А эта цивилизация, в которой мы, я, по счастью, оказался, это цивилизация взрослых людей.
But our civilization, where we all luckily are now located, is the civilization of grown-ups.
И поэтому, когда ты делаешь картины, то совершенно не нужно только дополнительно танцевать возле них, объяснять, приклеивать, объяснять.
You make a painting here, there's no need to like, you know, do song and dance around it and just stick some little sticker on it.
Здесь очень высокие критерии, конечно, у специалистов, конечно.
Here we have wonderful, highly qualified specialists.
Высокого уровня художественной культуры, которая,
a very high level of artistic culture,
которая идет через всю историю искусства, через музеи,
progresses through all
через
of the history
сегодняшних знаменитых arts, искусствоведов и кураторов.
The museum culture and the culture of the specialists of curators and
Но еще, конечно, другая причина. Дело в том, что сам жанр инсталляции, в который мы так безумно верили.
So, but there's another reason here, and that is that the reason that the genre of the installation, which we believed in a completely crazy way.
Оказывается, эфемерный, невероятно, так сказать, как воздух, он исчезает просто под рукой. Это та ткань, которая не сохраняется.
It's incredibly ephemeral. It's hard to maintain it. It's hard to preserve it. It just disappears beneath your fingers.
Повторить инсталляцию невозможно.
It's impossible to repeat an installation.
Все великие инсталляторы, которые All мы знаем, Бойс, Кингхольц и так далее, сохранились в единицах экземплярах, потому что
they
музеи не любят это дело, не умеют хранить это дело, прячут в какие-то подвалы, но потом
восстановить All of them have been preserved only in very few
от
Бойса, examples например, because museums don't like this stuff and don't know how to take care of it.
Осталось две или три его работы, которые он сделал. От Бойса остались
Бойс, there have only been two or three of his works.
Остальное это просто, извините, просто круче мусора, который никто ничего не знает, что с ним делать.
All of it, excuse me, it's just been transformed into a pile of rubbish that no one knows what to do with.
Дело, поэтому вот это отчаяние, так сказать, по отношению к сохранности инсталляции
great disenchantment and disappointment with relation to
привело к вот этому огромному вспышке, так сказать, огромного интереса к рисованию картин, о котором Милочка сказала правильно, что она никогда не прекращалась.
Which, of course, as Emilia said, never actually stopped for me.
Но, во-первых, это, конечно, связано с возрастом. Опять про это.
But there's also the question of age here. It's connected with my age.
Инсталляция требует безостановочные месяцы, если это большая инсталляция, с утра до вечера присутствовать, нервничать, прыгать, строить, ругаться и так далее.
Requires months of continuous work, to jump and build and from you know dawn till dusk put things together.
Переезжать из одного музея в другой.
Move from one museum to another museum.
Картины, ты встаешь утром, совершенно спокойно ты завтракаешь, рисуешь картину, вечером уходишь. Я должен сказать тебе, это невероятно комфортабельное занятие. И очень прошу для здоровья, для нервов, для психологии, все занимайтесь рисованием картин. Это невероятное, оздоровляющее занятие. Во-первых, ты очень важная профилактика, что если тебе кто-то мешает, ты можешь сказать: отойдите, не мешайте мне рисовать картину.
And also there's the incredible, the wonderful mechanism that if you're painting and someone starts bothering you, you can say to them, I'm painting, go away. And it works.
Yeah. Прекрасно. Прекрасное терапевтическое занятие.
It's a wonderful therapeutic activity.
Except that he doesn't sleep at night because the painting doesn't come out the right way.
Вот, но здесь, конечно, возникает следующая тема.
So here the next theme of our discussion is.
Кому нужна эта картина, которую ты так рисовал с таким удовольствием?
Who needs this painting that you've just created with such pleasure?
Надо сказать, что большинство художников не отвечает на этот вопрос.
One must say that for most artists there's no answer to this question.
Это то самое занятие, которое удовлетворяет его, чуть не сказал в качестве мастурбации, удовлетворяет ему самого себя.
It's one might say a form of masturbation which satisfies the artist himself.
Но некоторые художники имеют огромное честолюбие.
But there are certain artists who have a huge sense of personal worth and
да. И ему хочется, что кроме того, что эти картины ему нравятся самому, чтобы они тоже хоть
and
кому-то
they have a desire that not only will he be the, pleased by them, but that other people might also be pleased by the paintings.
Тут мы имеем три градации.
Here we have three gradations.
Обратите внимание, что по закону шизофрении я все время обращаюсь к слову три, к цифре
yes,
три.
By schizophrenic law, I always use the.
It's also traditional Russian. Always has to be number three.
Always use the number three.
Да, потому что вся жизнь в России – хорошее начало, yeah, непонятное
because,
продолжение и всегда печальный конец.
Because all of life is divided up into the wonderful start, the incomprehensible middle bit, and the sad and tragic conclusion.
Поэтому я хочу сказать, что художники тоже имеют три этажа амбиций.
But of course I have to say that, right? Once again, artists have three stages, three gradations of ambition.
Первая амбиция – понравиться моим близким.
First ambition is to be to please those who are close to me.
Речь, конечно, идет не о родственниках, а о маленьком круге друзей, которые тоже рисуют.
But we're not talking about relatives. We're talking about an intimate circle of friends who also probably paint.
Это самая простая и самая, так сказать, удобная этаж
удовлетворения. Stage
потому,
of pleasure for an
потому
artist.
Что каждый друг хвалит другого в расчете на то, что его тоже похвалят.
Because every friend will praise his friend in the hopes that he'll be praised in return.
Это так называемое local искусство, и оно.
This is local art.
И это всегда прекрасно. Это как играть в футбол не на стадионе, а у себя во дворе.
It's playing soccer not in a stadium, but for yourself with your friends.
Второй этаж амбиции – это понравиться в локальном отношении, то есть в своем регионе.
Second stage of ambition is to be a success in your local area, in your region.
Это уже более серьезно,
и тут
очень большая помощь каждому художнику – это национальные традиции
and of course, national
его региона. Его регион.
And regional traditions are an extraordinarily large help for each artist.
Немецкому художнику уже достаточно иметь основания, чтобы понравиться и встать в ряды известного немецкого художника.
A German artist can be pleased and happy and satisfied that he's become known as a German artist and has pleased his German audience.
Японскому в ряды японских художников, русскому в ряды русских художников, иранскому и так далее.
Same thing, Japanese can achieve success in Japan, an Iranian who achieves success in Iran, etc.
Надо сказать, что в прошлой эпохе этот уровень был последний и достаточный.
In a past epoch, this was the last level of ambition, and it was fully satisfactory.
Мы знаем, это, конечно, время известное, это конец, середина и конец XIX века.
This is, of course, a time we can all recall, or it's a well-known time. It's the end, the middle and the end of the
19th
century. Когда
все амбиции художника стать во главе или создать, тем более, национальную художественную школу.
When the ambitions of every artist was to stand at the head of or to create a national artistic school.
Ну, в Америке это немножко задержалось, извините, я говорю о том, что я не очень точно знаю, но задача, которую поставил Барнетт Ньюман, Рейнгард, Ротко и так далее, это было, и Горки, это создание американской школы искусства, американской ментальностью, отдельно от Европы, и мы только должны аплодировать, что этот фокус удался.
We can only applaud the fact that that intention was a success.
Но, к сожалению, появилось вот это проклятое слово поднять интернациональный арт.
But unfortunately, there appeared this awful term, international art,
который полностью, так сказать, расстроил и истерзал душу всех художников.
Which has completely tormented and destroyed the souls of all artists.
Теперь предельная планка поднята уже на уровень, так сказать, быть известным и, так сказать, иметь популярность в international мире, а не в national мире.
Yes, now the limit which has been raised is the limiting factor of becoming well-known and successful as an international artist
Обратите внимание, что это идет параллельно со спортивными, так сказать,
Same thing is going on in the sports
world. Спортивной ментальностью. Сначала очень важный был национальный чемпионат.
First there were national championships.
То, что называется Олимпийские игры. Греческие Олимпийские игры, да?
The Greek Olympic Games.
А что происходило в Индии или там в Византии в это время, это никого не интересовало.
India or in Byzantium, that wasn't interesting to anyone.
Сегодня проблема в том, что...
Now the problem is that...
Что художник должен получить признание...
An artist must receive recognition.
Как Федерер в теннисе получить...
Like
позитивную реакцию
in tennis, he must receive a positive reaction in the international scene.
У кого? Вот это очень важно.
But from whom? That's a good
кто
question.
Кто это? Те, кто раздает эти священные билеты. Кто, так сказать,
passes out the
кто, кто эти люди, которые, так сказать, от которых зависит судьба художника, yeah. который замахнулся на
international? From whom does this international fame depend? On whom?
Это отдельная тема, но проблема.
That's a separate question.
Но тем не менее эти эксперты international art существуют. Во-первых, нужно сказать, что это очень локальный регион. Это не Африка, это не Индия, это не Китай, это не
Африка,
это Европа и Америка.
It's Europe and America. It's not Africa. It's not India. It's North America and Europe, which has the specialists.
Это уже хорошо для этих регионов, потому
что
они, так сказать, раздают билеты, а другие только
pass out the tickets,
получают.
Everyone else can just believe them, receive them.
Всю, надо сказать, что преференции, так сказать, большие права на получение этих билетов имеют, естественно, художники, которые принадлежат к этим регионам.
Those who have a greater right to receive these tickets to the big feast are the ones who come from those same regions.
Остальные регионы находятся в плачевном состоянии.
Everyone else, all the other regions are in a state of disarray, in an awful condition.
По одной причине, их культура, их критерии принадлежат к их национальным регионам.
Because their specific criteria belong to their national regions.
И таким образом перейти от локального региона в интернациональный регион бесконечно трудно.
From the local from the national to the international.
Вот тут работает, я не побоюсь это страшное слово сказать, как бы неоколониальные принципы.
I'm not afraid to call it. It's basically a neo-colonial principle.
Как ты не бейся, как ты не вопи и не кричи, что я нахожусь на интернациональном уровне, тебя отбрасывают, потому что ты не принадлежишь политически, исторически к этому региону.
They'll just kick you away and saying that you're a national local artist.
Но не так все страшно. Существует,
but it's not that bad.
Существует так называемые процентные нормы.
Ah, there are still various
квота.
There are still certain quotas. A quota system.
Чтобы еще более, так сказать, обострить эту тему, я хочу сказать, что такая квота существовала на поступление в высшее учебное заведение евреев в царской России.
I would like to point out, just to make sure that the fact doesn't get lost, that a similar system of quotas existed for the entrance of Jews into the higher university system in the Tsarist Empire.
Но и в советской тоже в советской тоже существовал процент евреев, которые можно пустить в университет.
A certain percentage of Jews who were allowed to enter into the university.
Точно такая норма существует в арт-мире и прекрасно
работает сегодня. Same kind of a system, same kind of a normalization exists in the art world.
Все эти локальные школы, региональные,
all these local regional schools,
в зависимости от их размеров, они попадают в небольшой процентную так сказать, норму, которая положена, можно войти в интернациональную систему.
Have a chance to fall into this percentage norm and get into the international system.
Это, конечно, вы понимаете, говорит нервный и, так сказать, нервный художник.
This is, you understand, a nervous artist speaking.
I mean, one of the basic questions I have is, what is the nature of your collaboration?
Can you keep a secret?
We try. Do too.
We keep a secret as well.
There must be more questions in the audience.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
We've been overwhelming the audience with discourse. We have to have questions, too.
I was very interested in the Matthew's question about your considering yourselves American international artists. What does that I guess I want to know, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to be an American international artist? And has your relationship with America or American art changed since the time you arrived?
In the very beginning, when Ilya just came, the general idea, the wish was only to kind of tell the story about us, about the way we live, about the way we suffer, about the way we work, everything about us. It's like some aborigine from islands come and tells the story of this island. It was going on for a few years, and then eventually the biggest ideas, the biggest thematics evolved. And as we talk about utopia, we talk about human values, and it become more international. Soviet element, of course, there, and narrative, despite what he's saying, is still there. Maybe not on the paintings anymore, maybe not such an elaborate explanations next to the work, but it's still there. It's every painting, if you look at it, it's narrative by itself. We are immigrants, and as every immigrant who knows, the moment you leave your country, you are uprooted. You don't have roots anymore, they're in the air. So to say I'm here, for example, I'm here for 40 years, that's a long time. Am I really American? Before I married Tilly, I would say yes, although it was a long time ago. Because I was here, my children grew up here, my culture was here more than Russian because I left very early. Today, he was much older when he came here, so for him it's much more difficult to get into everyday life. And besides, he is a kind of artist and person who is not interested in everyday life. The idea of escapism of his heroes and installation, that's not something which come out of the blue. It's a very personal idea. He always trying to escape, but he is escaping from everyday life. So luckily for him, he has a situation when he doesn't have to deal with it. Culture, which is true. Culture, we always belong to international culture, more so than Russian. Why? Art, if he would be interested only in Russian culture, art culture, historically, he would be where everybody else from Soviet Union is, artists from Soviet Union, because it's local. What he was saying right now about local, it is local. They want to be international, but still the element of locality, local language, local mentality, local presentation of their work is so strong that it's very difficult to enter international art world. In order to enter international art world successfully, you have to preserve your local flavor, but at the same time, you have to be able to present it in international language. The same in life. I can't say we're Americans, but I definitely can say we're not Russians anymore. Are we Europeans? Not really. So we're still somewhere in the air. We travel a lot. Now less because of the age. Ilya can't travel so much, so we work more here. But if I would say today, where is our home? Yes, here is our home. I can't imagine relocating from here. I can't imagine relocating to any other country. Because sometimes, for different reasons, a lot of people ask us, why did you end up in America? I can't answer. I end up naturally because I immigrate. For me, there was choice of, I don't know, Canada, South Africa, United States. I didn't like Europe so much at that time. And America was utopia. It was a dream. We knew this dream has problems, especially even if you didn't believe in Soviet propaganda. You being realistic, you knew, of course, it's not a paradise. But it still was a dream for everybody. And it's still a dream when we come to Middle East, when we come to Arab's country, we come to Europe, people ask, where you come from? I wouldn't say I come from Russia. I'm saying I come from United States. And people ask, New York? Yes. And in these two words, it's a whole dream and hope and kind of longing for paradise. Or you come from paradise. Oh, of course, Americans are very bad today. We have terrible reputation all around the world for no reason at all. And I think we're guilty ourselves in this because we keep blaming ourselves for the world problems. And that's contagious. They believe, we make people believe that it's our fault, which is not. But still, when common people talk to you, taxi drivers, people who work with us on installation, and we encounter a lot of people, it's still a dream. It's still a fantasy. And Americans still people who are happy because they live in this very interesting paradise, utopian country. So that's, I hope I answer your question. I don't know if it's correct answer, but that's the answer.
Hi. Okay, here's my question. So, Mr. Kabakov, you said that the art world today, both institutionally and aesthetically, is in distressing shape. But it's impossible to give it up if you are a professional, either an artist or a curator or a historian. It's impossible to stop engaging with it.
It depends where you are in this field.
Right, but I'm not in this field. I'm not an artist. I'm not a historian. I'm not a curator. So why not just walk away from the problems of the art world?
It's your. There is a few fields when you, where you come not because you want to make money, or because you expect a bright future. It's because you can't live without it. And this is ballet, this is music, this is poetry, and this is art. You, if you come here for the reasons I said you're not supposed to, then you can quit and go out if you are not successful or you don't like it or you are thinking it's negative in a negative situation right now. When you are professional, just because it's not a lifestyle, but it's a calling, you can't quit. It's your life.
В чем вопрос?
Вопрос был,
если негативно,
если в искусстве, да. В таком ужасном состоянии, почему не просто отказаться?
Если ты профессионал, почему ты не откажешься от этого, если в таком ужасном состоянии? Можешь ли ты отказаться? Это твоя жизнь.
Нет, нужно так сказать, что
One must put it this way.
Пока ты живешь, у тебя есть целый ряд вопросов. Самый главный вопрос: зачем ты живешь на этом свете?
While you're alive, you have to face a whole series of questions. The most important question is: why do you live? Why are you alive?
Да, и каждый отвечает это сообразно своей профессии, а не потому, что он просто живет как мартышка на этом свете.
And everyone has to answer that in connection with his own profession, not because he's some kind of chimpanzee.
Нам профессия дана для того, чтобы ты ответил на этот вопрос.
You have a profession in order that you may be able to answer this question.
Это не просто занятие какое-то.
It's not something that you just do.
Этот вопрос связан с одной очень важной вещью, что искусство
this question is tied with one very important
это
matter.
Это не замкнутая на себя система, хотя, конечно, арт мира в какой-то степени
закрыт.
Это часть культуры.
It is a part of a broader culture.
И художник, каждый художник, который работает, он работает в двух в одной сфере он работает в профессиональной, локальной сфере, которая она существует по требованию сегодняшнего дня
сейчас.
Но одновременно он работает в области универсальной общечеловеческой культуры.
In a universal, general human cultural situation.
И вот здесь очень интересная вещь. Здесь у него есть как бы две ответственности. Первая ответственность перед миром искусства, а вторая ответственность как вообще, так сказать, интеллигентного, ответственного человека перед миром культуры, в котором он в ней участвует.
He has a responsibility to the world of culture as a whole, as an educated and intelligent person. He has this responsibility to the general state of culture.
Здесь тогда возникает следующий вопрос. Или я буду художником и игнорировать культуру?
Here we get the next question, which is I could be an artist and ignore that larger sphere of culture.
То есть неважно, что я несу своими работами, что я делаю. Я делаю, потому что я работаю в закрытом арт-мире.
That is to say that it doesn't matter what happens in the larger sphere, it's just that I am doing my own artistic work.
Или я ответственен под историей культуры, которая представляет собой огромную саму по себе ценность. Или я работаю в сфере культуры.
One can view oneself as being located in the sphere of culture, which in and of itself represents a huge value.
Это удваивает проблему для художника.
That just doubles the problem for the artist.
Потому что как художник он может быть хорошим. Допустим, мне можно сказать, что товарищи, извините, я просто скажу, художники под именем Маккартни, может быть, замечательные художники.
So, you know, for me, you look at this artist Маккартни, for instance, and say, this is a wonderful, it may be a wonderful artist.
Но когда мы спрашиваем, каковы они как участники культуры человеческой?
But then I ask the second question, how do I assess her as a member of a
это немножко
world
другая,
culture?
Другая проблема.
Then it's a whole different kettle of fish.
Но такой же вопрос должен, не может не стоять перед каждым художником.
But these questions stand before every artist.
But your question was if you're not an artist and you're not involved in the art world, why should you care about art today if it's in such terrible territory?
Yeah, I would say like this. You can work for the art world or you can work for the culture. Art world, it's a temporary situation. Today it's bad, tomorrow it's good, bad again, it changes. But culture, it's continuous. It's forever. It starts some God knows where, and it's hopefully is going to be also eternal. So the question is why you are in this field. If you are for culture, of course you don't really pay attention. Good situation, bad situation, you know it's going to be somewhere. It's change. It's important.
Еще вот это очень замечательный вопрос.
This is also a wonderful question.
Зачем нужно быть искусством и художником, когда можно быть простым человеком? Да, так стоит вопрос.
Нет.
Вопрос был. Можно ли жить без искусства? Да, вот так или так.
Can one live without art? One could phrase the question in that way.
Без арта можно, без культуры нельзя.
Да, оказывается, вопрос, казалось бы, страшно простой. Можно прожить, можно не ходить в музей, можно не ходить на выставки, не открывать ни, одной книги по искусству, не знать ни одного художника. Можем. Но самое замечательное, что все равно этот человек живет в искусстве. То есть он смотрит на всякие программы телевидения, слушает всевозможные поп и так далее. Он погружен в... Он все равно находится в искусстве. Вопрос только в том, к какому, так сказать, какому этажу он относится.
So you're always living in the art world. It's just you might be living in a really terrible art world.
Да, дышать воздухом. Ты же не можешь сказать, что я буду жить, не дыша
воздухом.
Но весь вопрос, какой кондиции этот воздух.
The question is, what quality of air you're going to breathe.
The art world's bad, but the larger art world is even worse. So that's the situation.
This is the answer of a Moscow conceptualist, keep in mind.
It's on? Okay, so it's often said that Russian culture is logocentric, and that's pretty evident in your work from the Soviet period. So we could say that American culture is very visual, is image-centric. And so I wonder if you could talk about how you relate to this kind of barrage of images living in the U.S.
and how it relates to your work.
Ответить на это так можно.
One can answer,
даже я написал книгу, что с моей точки зрения так называемая визуальность, то есть чистая визуальность, на самом деле довольно грязная визуальность. На самом деле она полностью тоже вся является насквозь иллюстративна, насквозь пропитана текстом. Она насквозь нарративна.
Visual culture is always imbued with narrative with textuality.
Весь такой вопрос, какого типа нарратива? Какого типа нарратив там содержится? Дело в том, что визуальность и западная, можно сказать, она тоже имеет большую историю.
One may say that visuality has a in Western
history, так сказать, попытка выделить чистый фермент визуальности. Чистый экстракт визуальности.
Fermentation of visuality.
Но дело в том, что язык, как таковое, слово и текст, это, так сказать, есть та среда, в которой вообще человек может существовать. У него не может быть, в принципе, чистой визуальности.
The language, the word, language and the word, these are the things without which the human cannot exist.
Вначале было слово, и мы все, можно так сказать, пока мы люди, мы все время употребляем
people,
язык.
We will always be using language.
И так называемая чистая визуальность — это только та фикция или отказ от слова, но это не значит, что быть, так сказать, избавленным от слова.
But that doesn't mean that you have in fact become freed from the word.
Thank you very much. I'd like to return to the question you began with of the utopia, and in the Russian context, my question would be simply, what can one learn from the Russian Revolution?
Этот вопрос висит в воздухе у каждого человека, не только у
нас.
That question is hanging in the air before every individual.
Весь мир спрашивает, в чем смысл этого события.
If you ask me, what the meaning of that event was?
Это настолько это кровавое, безобразное, бессмысленное и с ужасными последствиями, так сказать, деструкции явления, что хочется сказать, кто допустил это явление.
This was such a bloody, awful, destructive, and with such horrible consequences event. One wants to ask, who said that could happen? Who allowed that to happen?
Но можно так сказать, что все действительно и разумно, как говорил Гегель.
But one could say with Hegel that everything is
truly rational.
One may search for that meaning.
Этот все теперь понимают все больше и больше, особенно благодаря новым последним событиям, понимают смысл русской революции.
Everyone understands now, especially in the light of the most recent events, what the meaning of the Russian Revolution was.
Русская революция — это первая революция, которая не имела реставрации.
The Russian Revolution was the first revolution that had no reaction and restoration.
Французская революция прошла этапы. Зверства, убийства, гражданской войны, диктаторства и, наконец, реставрации Наполеонов.
We went through stages of horrible bloodshed, of
restoration,
and then finally the restoration of the
monarchy. То же самое английская революция.
Same thing happened with the English
Cromwell, но опять вернулось все, была реставрация. Только одна революция, русская, не имела реставрации.
The Russian, which had no
restoration. They're trying to restore Stalin.
Нет.
It's too late.
Можно так сказать. One may say it in this way. Опыт русской революции —
the experience of the Russian Revolution —
это опыт для всего человечества в том, что если мы будем двигаться все время вперед после революции, то мы превратимся в совершеннейшую мерзкую кашу, лишенную всякого человеческого существования.
The lesson of the Russian Revolution for all of us is that if you have a revolution in the belief that one can continue to move ahead, away from that revolution on its impetus, that what you will create, in fact, is an awful, bloody mess.
Но это только взгляд для тех, кто смотрит на революцию со стороны.
But that's the view of those who look at the revolution from the side.
Но те, кто находится внутри революции, они это никогда не
видят. Within the revolution, they can never see that.
Значит, страшные люди — это не страна, которая сделала революцию, а те, которые персонально, это персональные.
The most often frightening people are not the people, it's not the nation, the people that made the revolution. It's those who led the revolution, who thought it up, who
created
it, who provoked it to take place.
Those are the most awful.
They're like a tumor.
В самом начале ее доктор должен ее познать тогда, когда она маленькая, только первый атом революции надо уничтожать. Потом, когда рак расползался, уже сделать ничего нельзя.
When it's metastasized, it's already too late.
In the lesson of revolution, and actually in every Russian big event, a political event, was the best described by one of Russian politicians. We want to do like to make it better and come out as usual.
Yeah.
Вот это и есть урок.
That's the lesson.
Это и есть урок русской революции. Нужно поймать самую, так сказать, революцию в самом начале, когда можно ей свернуть голову.
Catch the revolution in its very earliest stage and rip off its head. Wow.
I also would like to return to the question of the utopia and the importance of the past. How do you move forward while looking backward?
Я хочу вернуться к вопросу об утопии, вопросе о прошлом. Как можно продвигаться вперед и смотреть назад?
Дело в том, что как можно идти вперед, глядя назад. Да? Во-первых, то, что эта фраза звучит, это сказано по поводу, как двигаются ангелы на этом свете.
First of all, one has to keep in mind that this is the way, it's already been said, that angels move in our world.
Это общий, ahead, это известно, back, в теологии это известно.
Known in theology.
Ангел идет вперед, глядя назад.
The angel walks forward, looking back.
Дело в том, что я могу только сказать субъективные вещи.
I can only speak, of course, from a subjective standpoint.
Есть люди внутренней жизни и есть люди внешней жизни.
There are people of the interior life and there are people of the external life.
Интроверты и
there are introverts and extroverts.
Каждый из этих типов, чистых не бывает, но более-менее склоняется к разным способам существования.
Tend towards those two versions of existence.
В чистом виде интроверт опирается на три очень важные вещи.
The introvert, in the purest form, is based on three very important things.
What I love is that in conversation, yeah, Ilya will always say, the point is there are three, and he's coming up with the idea as he says, the point is there are three. It's brilliant.
I was disturbed that
the point is there are three.
I was disturbed there are only two types. There are only two types.
Мы передаваем просто сумасшедшие. Дело в том, значит, ну что делать? Значит, первая очень важная часть — это иметь память. Ориентация на память, присутствие актуальной памяти внутри своей головы, а не в компьютере, где ты нажимаешь кнопку и спрашиваешь, что нарисовал Рубенс.
Рубенс.
Если мы в компьютере, memory в компьютер, конечно, мы говорим Rubens, и там 10 фотографий есть.
Right. Not the Google network, which can give you Rubens, but a real memory, which exists inside your
head. Память — это когда я говорю Rubens, весь Rubens, его жизнью, мастерской, его политическими убеждениями, его дипломатией и так далее. Немедленно у тебя огромные панорамы перед головой. И так по всем вопросам, которые существуют. Так называемый, ты должен обладать универсальной памятью.
And that has to be the case for everything, for all questions which could arise. You have to have a universal memory.
Конечно. Это в идеальном случае, когда у тебя интеллигентная семья, которая обладала этими вещами.
Of course, that's on the ideal circumstances.
А если нет, то идеальный учитель в школе, который тоже... Если нет ни того, ни другого, у тебя нет памяти.
Or a good school education. But if you don't have either of those, school education or a family which will bring you up in these traditions, then you're up a creek with that memory. And then you don't have any memory, and there's nothing to speak about. The second most important element for internal life is fantasy.
Опять не в виде фильма фэнтези,
not in the form of fantasy films,
а фантазия, которая у тебя работает постоянно и автоматически. Ты беспрерывно продуцируешь что-то в своем воображении. И третья часть
—
это рефлексия. Ты должен видеть самого себя, все, что ты делаешь, и даже то, что ты подумал со стороны. Ты должен беспрерывно, не иногда, а все время видеть себя
со стороны.
Кто этот тот, который смотрит на тебя со стороны?
Who is it that looks at you from the side?
Хороший вопрос.
That's a good question.
Но каждый знает, о чем идет речь.
But everyone knows what we're talking about here.
Фрейда это называлось сверхя.
Freud talks about the superego.
Юнга это назывались архетипы.
Jung talks about archetypes.
Все знают. Во всяком случае, когда мы говорим, я идиот, я несчастный, я неправильный, это тот, кто нас контролирует.
This is all the same element of observation from the
side. У художника тоже есть этот сверхя.
Artists also have a superego.
Это обычно, когда говорят, что бы об небо сказал, там, раньше говорили Рафаэль, Рембрандт и так далее, а сейчас бы сказал, что бы мне сказал бы директор музея Тейт.
What would the director of the Tate say about me? That's what the artist continuously says to himself.
И это постоянно.
And that's
и
continuous.
Вот, к чему это я все говорил, я уже не помню.
I don't know where I was heading with this discussion. I've completely forgotten.
Потерял всякую аудиторию, я говорю сам собой.
Вопрос был о том, как можно продвигаться вперед.
Не глядя назад.
И глядя назад.
И смотреть назад.
Так вот, обладая этими тремя свойствами.
So, if one has these three elements, these three characters, talents,
qualities.
They will help you to move ahead.
Во-первых, память тебе говорит о том, что никогда ничего нового ты на самом деле не сделал.
Memory will remind you that nothing new can ever be done.
Рефлексия говорит о том, что не тебе судить, а есть более высокая инстанция.
Reflection will help you to keep in mind that you are not going to judge things, but there will always be some higher point of view on you, some higher instance that will be able to judge your works.
Твоя фантазия говорит о том, что что надо стараться все время что-то придумывать, потому что потому что прошлое реализуется в настоящем только в форме совершенно новых форм.
Because the past realizes itself in the present only in the form of absolutely novel forms.
And also because you know where to borrow things. Appropriation art come out of the past, okay?
And if I'm extroverted?
Я не хочу говорить. О них я не говорю.
I don't speak about them.
У них все в порядке. Почему я не хочу сказать? Потому что у них всегда все в порядке.
У них нет рефлексии.
I don't want to speak about them because the fact of the matter is that everything is always okay for them.
У них нет памяти, нет рефлексии, нет
фантазии. And they don't have fantasy.
Что может быть лучше?
What could be better?
No problems.
I think we've... That was the final word, I think. Yeah. Thank you.